Dear friends, can we have your attention, please? Thank you very much.
The reason why I asked Bahia to read those two lines twice is because I don't know whether you noticed that there is reference to a 3 years respite. And there's also a reference to a third 7-year plan. This is not included in our notes. And I thought that it was important for me at least to present it to you and later to include it in the notes. When Shoghi Effendi gave the second 7-year plan in 1946, after the 2 years, this is what he said. And for a number of years, even after the launching of the 7-year plan, the friends in the United States thought that they're going to finish the 7-year plan. They're going to have 3 years of total rest, and then they're going to have a third 7-year plan. And that this third 7-year plan will end in 1953. This is how they thought. And Shoghi Effendi left them with this impression for a number of years. Later, when the time came, nearly 4.5 years after the launching of the 7-year plan, as you see in this cable that Bahia read to you, in the second part of that cable, he speaks about the birth of the Baha'i revelation. He refers to the Siyah Chal. Now, what happened in the Siyah Chal? The Siyah Chal, as you know, is the prison in Akka. In Tehran, where Baha'u'llah was imprisoned for 4 months. The 4 months began in August of that year and ended 4 months later in the December of that year. From August 1952 till December 1952. And when one reads the stories about the Siyah Chal, partly as written by eyewitnesses who were there with Baha'u'llah, or from the writings of Baha'u'llah himself about this experience that he had in prison, you see that this experience, this special intimation that he received, was about halfway through this period, at about the midway point. So Shoghi Effendi took August at one end and December at another end, and he said 2 months in between would be October. So he said, we are going to start a holy year from October 52 till October 53. This was not to be a respite of anything. It was just while things were moving, at the same time, the Baha'is of the world were called upon to celebrate the holy year and to call to mind the events in the Siyah Chal. Because Shoghi Effendi explained, he had already explained this in God Passes By, and in his letters, both in Persian and in English, to the Baha'i world, he explained that the announcement of the revelation of Baha'u'llah underwent a period of time, and it was in three stages. The first stage he called intimation. The second stage he called declaration. The third stage he called proclamation. Intimation was in Tehran, in the Siyachal. Declaration was in Baghdad, when in the Rizwan garden he declared himself, and we celebrate the Rizwan period. And this happened in 1863. Proclamation happened in Adrianople and continued until he was even in Acre. The intimation period was during these 4 months. So it was at the midway point of that 4 months. The declaration was over a period of 12 days. The proclamation was over a period of 5 years, sometimes 5.5 years. Again, the intimation is when he started, when he had this experience in the prison. Now, of course, many questions have been put to Abdu'l-Bahá about what is really the meaning of this experience that Baha'u'llah had in the prison. And what is the experience that the manifestations of God generally have? That now, for example, Jesus Christ says, a dove came and sat on his head, and this was a symbol that the Holy Spirit had come to him. Muhammad says, I heard a voice on Mount Hira, and that voice was the voice of Angel Gabriel, and the voice said, read. That was the experience of this revelation, this new revelation. And every prophet had such an experience, and they refer to it, that this thing happened to me, and therefore this is the beginning of the revelation. The Bab, for example, says that I had a dream. I had a dream that the head of Imam Hussein was cut off, and there was some drops from his head of blood, and I put my mouth and I drank some of the blood from the head, the beheaded head of Imam Hussein. And this was the intimation. So you see, you have all these things, experiences. So many of the friends have asked Abdu'l-Bahá, what is the meaning of all these things? Now he, if you read some answered questions carefully, he says that in his answer, he says that I've been different from other children right from the very beginning. And others even have noticed that they were different. They had a special distinction, different from others. If you remember in the story in the Bible, in the New Testament, it says that Jesus Christ went to the synagogue and he preached. He was 12 years old. I was preaching. We have stories about the Bab as a child. We have stories of Baha'u'llah during the period before he declared his mission, even the period when he was during the Ba'ath, outwardly he was a follower of the Bab, yet he was doing some wonderful things. So Abdu'l-Bahá says, if others notice that there is a special distinction, is it conceivable that the manifestations themselves are not aware that they are different? By saying that, by putting this question like this in some answered questions, he is really telling us that they knew. But they were using wisdom. Wisdom in disclosing to others. Wisdom in preparing the way for others to understand. Be that as it may, the important thing is that it is in three stages. The Siyachal was, it's an important event. So Shoghi Effendi was not going to allow this event after 100 years to pass by when he had texts from Baha'u'llah saying that he had this experience while he was in prison in CHR. And the midway point was October. Therefore, we're going to have a holy year and we're going to celebrate this event as during this year, from October to October, 52 to 53, we're going to have intercontinental conferences and we're going to announce during this period, this time, we're going to announce the goals of a new plan. Now, if you look at your chart, you see that the 7-year plan ends in 1953, and then the new plan is the 10-year plan. At that point, which is 4.5 years after having spoken about the 3 years respite and the third 7-year plan, that was at that time he told the American friends, there is no respite. Instead of the third 7-year plan, we're going to have a 10-year plan. And he didn't say this only to the American believers. He said this to the entire Baha'i, to the entire Baha'i world. 10-year plan. A crusade. It is going to be something momentous. Unprecedented. Everybody shook. I remember Violette and I were in those days young Baha'is reading these messages of Shoghi Effendi. What is going to happen to these 10 years? What is Shoghi Effendi talking about? Excited. Everybody was excited to see what was in store. What did Shoghi Effendi have in mind? So this is, I think, enough explanation about the third 7-year plan and the cancellation of the 3 years respite. Now, while this thing was going on, as I told you, maybe several times during these last 2-3 days, he was urging the National Assemblies, other National Assemblies, to come forward. And as I told you, the first one, as my notes indicate, the first one was the British. And already before, during the rest, at the beginning of this respite period, they came forward in 1944. And they started their 6-year plan, which was a glorious plan. First time that the British Baha'i community, in an organized way, were going forward and they were going to have 19 local spiritual assemblies, according to the goals specified by the Guardian. Then, 2 years later, of course, the United States itself and Canada started having their own 7-year plan. And at the same time, Shoghi Effendi had succeeded in encouraging Iran to have their own teaching plan. And they had their own 45-month plan. That happened, it began 1946. And at the same time, India and Pakistan and Burma were encouraged to have their own teaching plan. Then the following year, 1947, he was able to join 2 other national assemblies, Australia and New Zealand, and Iraq. And then the following year, 1948, he was successful in moving Egypt and in moving Germany. Poor Germany had a very good excuse because of the war, because of the Second World War. They couldn't do much. But as soon as he saw that they were beginning to breathe and to start the teaching work, after 1945, he allowed 3 years to pass by, and then finally he got hold of the German and Austrian Baha'i community. And he said, now you can't, you are almost the last National Assembly. All the other National Assemblies are busy. What about you? And so they started their own teaching plan in 1948. And that brought the total to 8 national spiritual assemblies at that time. Now, could I just say a few words about this question of vying? You see, vying is a policy that was started by Abdul Baha. How did he do it? He went to the United States on a visit, 1911, 1912. If you read his talks, you see something very interesting. He praises the Iranian Baha'i community. He says, look what your brethren are doing in Iran. They're doing this, they're doing that, they're teaching, they're living the Baha'i life. They have been, even despite the persecutions, they're doing so many things for the faith. He held the Iranian Baha'i community as a model. He told the Americans, follow that example. So Shoghi Effendi did the same thing throughout his ministry. He would set people up, encourage them, and then he would say, look what they are doing. What about you? This was his policy. All the time urging, nudging, encouraging, stimulating, so that people will compete. The word vying in Persian, for those of you who speak Persian, is sebqat giriftan. In Arabic it is as-sabiqun. As-sabiqun. Ulaika humul muqarrabun. This race, it is a race. It's a spiritual race. People are running. People are swimming. It's not like football or boxing or anything like that. You have your line, you run. Another person runs. So there is a competition. You look at your friend, you see he's running fast. You want to go ahead of him. So this is how he stimulated. But he drew attention to it. For example, I was on pilgrimage. I had come from Africa, and the work in the Pacific was developing. So he said, you know, we have so many Baha'is now in the Pacific Islands. Look, we have Gilbert and Ellis Islands. They have so many hundreds and so many Baha'is. We have now Baha'is in Mentawai Islands, so many, all in the Pacific. The Pacific is moving forward. You go, when you go back, tell the African friends. Tell them, are they ready to allow the Pacific Islanders to overtake them? All the time pushing in this way. This is healthy. This is why it is very important to be an example. In our personal lives, we don't have to advertise ourselves. But we have to live the Baha'i life. And if we live the Baha'i life, other people see us, they like to be like us. There is a tablet from Baha'u'llah in which he says, people who are truly devoted to the cause, people who have arrived at the station of assurance and certitude, consider themselves to be the sole promoters of the cause. What does that mean? It means that if I see somebody else is not active, I shouldn't say, well, others are inactive. It doesn't matter. He's a Baha'i, I'm a Baha'i, it's all right. He's not going to a 19-day feast. He doesn't have any of the core activities. He doesn't do anything, well, so it's okay. So if we think like that, it is very bad. I should say to myself, what others are doing or are not doing is not my business. My business is my relationship to my Lord, my Creator, my Beloved. He tells me, arise, I have to arise. He tells me to move, I have to move. Others are moving or not moving is out of the question. I have to do my duty. This is the meaning of what Baha'u'llah is saying, I think. Once Abdu'l-Bahá said, he says, if you are asleep, wake up. If you are awake, don't lie down in your bed. Sit up. If you are seated, stand up. If you are standing, march. If you are marching, run. This is the process that God wants us to do. He doesn't say if others are running or if others. He's talking to me. If I am asleep, I have to wake up. If I am in bed, I have to sit up. Whether others are seated or sleeping, it's not my business. If I am seated, I have to stand up to be ready. Marching, I march. Marching is not enough. Run, I run. This is the process. He doesn't say if you are asleep, run. Gradually, drop by drop, step by step, we change. Baha'u'llah, Shoghi Effendi, in one of his letters, he says, the cause has the power to recreate us. Recreate means to create anew. The cause has this power. We have to tap this energy, this power from the cause. How do we do it? We do it through prayer. First of all, we have to decide that we want to arise. We have to decide that. We arise. We move according to the wishes of what the Universal House of Justice today is saying. They are now our guide. They are the light that we should follow. They are at the very center, the central institution of the covenant today for us. We have to watch and see, to strain our ears to see what news from Haifa. What does the House of Justice want? And without caring about what others are doing or not doing, I have to arise. I have to do my duty. Out of love. Out of pure love. Selfless love. Shoghi Effendi says when you arise, you should arise selflessly. We should love selflessly. That's how it should be. Then it has an effect. In the tablet of Baha'u'llah to Nasiruddin Shah, the Shah of Persia, Baha'u'llah says, those who are around you love you. I also love you. But there is a difference. They love you for their own sakes. I love you for your own sake. What does that mean? It means those of you who are around you, the ministers, the others, they are trying to get some privileges from you. So they show love towards you. I don't want anything from you. I love you for your own sake. This is pure love. This is how we should love the cause. Pure, unadulterated, unalloyed, unmixed. Pure. Pure motives. Pure heart. Pure love. That attracts divine confirmations. And without divine confirmations, we can do very little because we are alone. But with divine confirmations, with that special blessing that comes to us, then we can see the signs of his guidance. And when we see the signs of his guidance, we become stronger in faith. We grow spiritually grow. And that's how we read in the writings when Shoghi Effendi says that the cause has the power to recreate us. I should not say, well, you know, I did not have a very good environment in which I grew up. Therefore, you must understand, if I'm not a good Baha'i, you just take me as I am. Or I had such and such parents, or such. No, 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 this is not acceptable in the eyes of God. Of course, this is taken into consideration that one, some person has had certain blessings at the beginning, and another person has not had the same blessings at the beginning. This is true, in the sight of God is true. But to come to the conclusion that I can do nothing because I haven't had a good upbringing, this is wrong. Why? Because Shoghi Effendi is telling me, Ali, the cause can recreate you. You have to exercise your willpower. You have to arise. You have to love, and love with purity of motive. Then you become a magnet. When you become a magnet, you attract divine confirmations. These divine confirmations transform you, change you, strengthen you. You become a different person. You are timid, you become brave. You had doubts, you become full of certitude. You feel that you are inadequate, you say, I am inadequate, but your presence, your divine assistance will help me. And I must trust in you. I have full confidence. I will move ahead. I will go forward. You ask me to march, I will march. You ask me to run, I will run. I'm depending on your help, on your divine assistance. And that's how we help ourselves in recreating ourselves, in becoming a totally different person than what we are today. We become instruments in the hands of God, however inadequate we may be. I often say that when I look at myself, you may have heard me say this before. When I look at myself, I see I am like a knife. But I look at my knife, I see that the blade is rusted. It's old and rusted. I look at the handle of the knife, and I see it's dirty, it's not clean. But I offer myself, as I am. Inadequate, yes. Unworthy, yes. With many failings, yes. But I offer myself. And believe me, this blessed Lord, this blessed beauty, extends his arms, and I feel somebody is holding me. The handle is dirty. He's holding me. I feel it. And he's using me. Rusted, he uses. That's how I feel. I don't consider myself worthy at all. But I offer myself. And that's how we should be. And we should trust that he watches over us and he helps us. Now, as Shoghi Effendi carried on these messages, these 15 minutes, what he did was that when he was dealing with these national assemblies, he would look at that national assembly. For example, Iraq. Iraq is where Baha'u'llah declared his mission. Iraq is a place where Baha'u'llah spent 10, 11 years of his time after his arrival in the country. So he praises them. He says, look, you belong to such and such a country where Baha'u'llah declared his mission. You belong to a country where Baha'u'llah made his house there a place of pilgrimage. divine pilgrimage for all the Baha'is of the world to come and visit the house of Baha'u'llah in Baghdad. So he always found things in communities when he wanted to give them a plan. To Iran, you are the cradle of the faith. You have given so many martyrs for the promotion of the cause. You are the land where the Bab and Baha'u'llah was born. You are the land where the Baha'i faith was born. So, you see, he found things. When you see the messages that he wrote to these national assemblies, he's writing to countries in Europe. This, you are a country where it has blessed by the footsteps of Abdul Baha, writing to, let us say, the British Isles. Writing to Germany, same thing. Your country has been blessed by the footsteps of the master. So he always found things in the history of these countries to praise them, to encourage them, to give them hope, to make them feel that they are special. And they were special. So you see, this is one policy that he had. Another thing is, when these goals were being carried out, he wasn't sitting there idle. He was monitoring every little movement in that country through the reports that he received, through letters. He watched over the work of each community. Statistics, movements, increase in the number of believers, how many centers, what the translation work was, whether they had new translations of any of the books. He watched everything. And he would tell them, he would remind them that, look, you only have had only one book translated. This is not enough. You should also translate other books. You only have 3 local assemblies. It is not enough. You must have 5. Try to work hard for another 2. He watched over the work of each national spiritual assembly and encouraged them. He would send them not only letters, he would send cables so that they would receive his messages very soon. Another thing that he did was that when they did something good, when they did follow his instructions and his guidance, then he praised them. He praised them liberally, generously, lovingly, bountifully. You read his letters, so full of love and encouragement and gratitude for what they had done. And these people felt really that they were the champions of the entire planet. For that moment, yes, they were. And they derived more courage. And they went ahead. And then another thing about the 7-year plan is that during the 7-year plan, something new was developed by the Guardian. In the course of the plan, he decided that now the time had come for new national assemblies to, what we say in English, to spin off. It is where sometimes when you have planets and so on, suddenly one piece goes off and becomes another little planet of its own, or another moon of its own. So there was this spinning off of new national assemblies coming out of the mother assembly. For example, the United States and Canada were together. They started the second 7-year plan in 1947. 1 year later, he said, Canada is ready. Separate yourselves from the mother assembly of the United States. It became a separate national assembly in 1948. As soon as this national assembly was born, he sent them a new message, a new goal, a new plan. For the rest of the 7-year plan, it became a 6-year plan for the Canadian NSA. Right? He waited, then he saw that Central America, it has so many countries, maybe some 20 countries. South America, another 20 countries. He put them all together. He said, now we can have two new national assemblies. This has all happened during the second 7-year plan. New national assemblies towards the end of the 7-year plan. That means the plan was in 1953. In 1950, he started. South America, let it be a big regional national spiritual assemblies, including all of these various countries in South America. Central America, that means Central America plus the Caribbean. Put them together, he said, a special national assembly. Central America. So he started with one national assembly, which was United States and Canada in 1947, for 1946, and by the end of the 7-year plan, 1953, he had that one, which was the United States, plus Canada, plus South America, plus Central America. So you see, he had, instead of one, he had four national assemblies. So he had, because he wanted to have what he called generals. He wanted to have generals for the 10-year crusade. He wanted actually to have 12. So he was raising up these new national assemblies, encouraging them to come forward. And then the last one, as we are now in Italy, he had the Italo-Swiss National Spiritual Assembly. He combined Switzerland and Italy together. And when did he do it? Central America and South America was towards the end. He did it on the very same day that the 10-year crusade was beginning to start, was going to start. Rizwan, 1953. Same day, there is a new National Assembly, Italo-Swiss. And he says, I welcome the National Assembly of Italo-Swiss to be one of the 12 generals of the 10-year crusade. He had 12 generals to start the crusade, the 10-year plan. So you see the way Shoghi Effendi operated. He was on top of everything. Okay, I think that'll be enough for today.
Giovanni, I have a problem. I finished all my vocabulary to how to thank you. And we are just in the third day, so I don't know what happened to me at the end of the week. So thank you so much. Now we can run for our coffee break.